Good morning. Today is Wednesday, March 1st, and the time is 8:07 a.m. This meeting of the House Education Committee will please come to order. Members of House Education present thus far are Vice Chair Representative Parrish, Representative Sponholz, Representative Fansler, Representative Johnston, and I understand our other members are on their way. We have a quorum, and before we begin, I'd like to remind everyone to silence their cell phones, please. Today, our House Education Secretary is Kelly Burnett, and Alex Beebe Giudice is here from the Juno LIO for technical support. Thank you both for being here and helping us out today. Today, we will be hearing House Bill 102, Limited Teacher Certificates, and later on, HB 86, Student Loan Default License Renewal. So let's jump right in. Our first bill today is House Bill 102, so I'd like to ask the bill sponsor to come up and walk us through this bill and explain what it does.
Thank you, Madam Chair. For the record, Jonathan Christ Tompkins, representative for District 35, rural Southeast Alaska. And House Bill 102, I can speak to in sort of very high-level terms and pass the baton to Mr. Reed Magnans to my right, who has been tinkering with the different policies within the legislation. The bill is inspired by trying to create, sort of less bureaucratic pathways to bringing in teachers with very specific subject knowledge into Alaska schools. And one area of emphasis that this bill's been particularly inspired by is language education and our conversations with many of the immersion schools in the Anchorage School District, Ryoka Shula, Japanese Immersion School, many others in Anchorage, as well as for that matter, language immersion schools in the Matsu, the Fronteras, Spanish language immersion schools is one that comes to mind, as well as schools in rural Alaska, which seek to bring in fluent speakers of native languages to those schools and sometimes struggle with a certification, even if someone is a fluent speaker and there are no other sort of opportunities to bring that kind of very specific and unique knowledge into the classroom. And so this piece of legislation is sort of the manifestation of exploring some of the struggles that these schools have experienced. And I think maybe if it suits the chair and the committee, as far as the specifics and sort of sectional analysis of the bill and more detailed policy overview can defer to Mr. Magdans.
All right, just one moment, Mr. Magadans. I'd like to note that Representative Kopp has joined us at 8:10. Thank you. Go ahead.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee. This is Reed Magdans, staff to Representative Christ Tompkins. I can give you a little more detail about how the bill achieves the goals that Representative Christ Tompkins just laid out. Very briefly, for any of you who may not be familiar with immersion programs, it's essentially an educational model widely used across the country and the world in which at least 50% of the instructional time in the school, and that includes content area, so your social studies class, your math class, your science classes are taught in target language. So in the United States, that target language would not be English. It would be Spanish. It would be German. It would be Alaska Native language. There are four such programs within Alaska's public schools right now. Representative Christ Tompkins mentioned Fronteras in the Mat-Su, Ryoka Shula in Anchorage, which are both charter schools. There's also a well-established language immersion program within Anchorage's regular public schools, and there's also a Yupik language charter school in Bethel. As he stated, one of the big challenges is finding qualified teachers. The way HB 102 addresses this is by amending the state's existing limited teacher certificate program. In regulation, if you've worked with schools, you might be familiar with these certificates by the names Type I or Type M. Statute doesn't refer to them that way, but that is what they are called in regulation. Essentially, These are certificates that can be issued on a case-by-case basis at the request of a school district and only at the request of a school district for teachers with specific subject knowledge for which there are very few fully certified bachelor degree-trained teachers. Currently, these subject areas are vocational and technical education, Alaska Native Language and Culture, and military science. What HB 102 adds is any teacher teaching in a non-English language. So if you are teaching your class and your class is delivered entirely in Spanish or entirely in German or Japanese or Yupik or Inupiaq or Tlingit, you would be eligible to teach with a limited teacher certificate. Again, there are numerous, it's a case-by-case certificate, and there are numerous checks on it. The State Board of Education, and let me get the right wording for you, State Board of Education is empowered to pass regulations ensuring that teachers issued these certificates have, quote, instructional skills and subject matter expertise sufficient to ensure the person is competent as a teacher. The commissioner is granted the discretion to issue these certificates. It is not a requirement. And this specific school district has complete authority over who to request these certificates for. So it's at the school district's discretion whether they believe someone has the skills and qualifications to teach within their district. The certificates are only valid within that district. One other note I would bring up before I turn it over for questions is that one other thing this bill does is it empowers the academic policy committees of charter schools as well as school boards to request limited certificates. And that is because we hear concerns from some in the language immersion community, and this is not from existing charter schools, but more from those who are interested in starting new ones, that they are worried that they may face certain resistance from their school boards and would like to make sure that within their school they are able to offer the educational experience that charter is intended to offer. And that was language recommended by a former representative last year, in fact. So with that, I'll turn it over to any questions the committee may have.
Thank you, Mr. Mogdans. Before questions and before additional testimony, I'd like to – we have some folks from the department here, and I'd like them to come up and answer some questions first, and as this bill is going to get pretty technical, I think. Good morning.
Good morning.
Why don't you put yourselves on the record, and then I'll open it up for some questions.
I'm Bob Williams, Director of Educator and School Excellence at the Alaska Department of Education and Early Development.
Good morning. I'm Sandra Meredith, Administrator for Teacher Certification and Education.
All right. Very good. Thank you, and welcome. How is this proposed certificate different from Type M and Type I teaching certificates that the department already governs?
The difference between the proposed language in the bill and the current language, the bill language adds the ability for an individual to be certified in other areas besides their areas of expertise in language or culture based on a recommendation from a district or a request from a district without any evidence beyond that piece, beyond that request of that expertise. So, for example, an individual who has expertise in Tlingit would be able to teach the math for their students, and that there would not, while the bill allows for the department to come up with some mechanism, it prevents us from having an exam of any in a language other than Tlingit to test that expertise in math.
Yeah, I would I'll just add that the if you look at this HP 102, it lists four things there: Alaska Native cultures, military science, vocational and technical education, and any subject if the language of instruction is not English. We currently have Alaska Native culture. The JROTC is the military science. CTE is the vocational and technical education. Those are all available through the Type M. What's new to this is the any subject if the language of instruction is not English. And so the as a department, we look at kind of three big things: quality, how do we improve the quality of our system, capacity, is there ways we can increase the capacity of what we do, and how do we make sure that we're building trust with students, parents, school boards, districts, and the communities. And so this bill is seeking, I believe, to increase the capacity by increasing ways that people can get certified. In terms of the department, a concern would be how do we ensure there's quality? And if the only requirement is that they can teach any subject without showing an expertise in that subject, that's a concern that we're not sure that the quality is there. And the it specifically states that we can't check for content competency in English. And our department, DEET, has been cut, I think, 38% over the last few years. And so we don't really have the capacity to create content tests, or be prohibitively expensive to do so, but content tests in all these different languages to test that. So the question is, if you look at the fiscal note on this, it says zero, because the bill doesn't technically say we have to do it. It says we may do it. But if we really wanted to ensure quality, we would need to create tests in all these different languages, and that would be either incredibly expensive, and we don't really have the capacity to do that. Right. The other thing I would note is that, and I think this was just mentioned a moment ago, but something that is new is that we've always, the power for requests has always come from the districts, and so it's been a way to avoid that there could ever be a conflict between what a school wants and a district wants, because it goes with the district. And this would allow an academic policy committee from a charter school to make a specific request that could be in conflict with their district. And so that is, and the request for continuing that certification also. So those are kind of something very new there, in that an academic policy committee could be in conflict with the district and requesting something.
Thank you. I did have a question about how it got a zero fiscal note, and now I understand it's the may as opposed to the shall. And do you have any way of guesstimating how much it would cost to certify beyond the language competency? I assume this would be in that language. Say we have a Yupik speaker or a Tlingit speaker who the school wishes to teach math. How would you create that test?
I really wouldn't have a way to estimate the cost. What I can say, even if you look at the federally, the consortia to develop some, the Smarter Balance test, there's hundreds of millions of dollars that went into those development of those exams. And so to try and have a test that is that we know is valid and is fair in different languages, I think would be very expensive.
Representative Johnston.
So with ESSA, what will we be doing as far as testing in third and eighth grade? You know, are there going to be statewide tests?
Through the chair, Representative Johnston, ESSA is still going to require eighth grade testing through third grade through eighth grade, and then one grade in high school. So that's going to be continued for students.
So if we looked at local control of education, but how we as a state are responsible for excellence and trust, would the local school board had the opportunity to see how well their students were doing in a program with a teacher who maybe was not certified in math or elementary education but was instructing elementary grades in Tlingit through the test scores? Would there be some way for local communities to see what kind of academic performance?
Through the chair, Representative Johnston, the first statewide assessment is done in third grade, so it would for that measure, they would have to wait until third grade. Many districts are also using other interim assessments, examples like MAPS, that could show or demonstrate proficiencies at earlier grades.
Follow up. So your concern is not being able to, it's a language concern as far as their approach to math, and you having no ways of saying to the school district, this UPIC teacher can provide math skills because you have no way of testing in UPIC. Is that correct? Is that what you're saying for the teacher?
Through the chair, Representative Johnston, yes, that is one of our concerns.
So if this bill withdrew the language aspect of the testing for the teacher, would this state be more comfortable?
Through the chair, I believe we would.
Thank you.
Okay, thank you, Representative Johnston. Any other questions? Mr. Parrish, go ahead.
Thank you. I was wondering how this bill overall would interact with the department's responsibility, the school board's responsibility, and the school's responsibility to provide a quality education. Would it, how to say it? If there were an immersion school in which none of the teachers could be, let's see, examination, were required to demonstrate competency in a subject matter in a, unless that test were given in the language of instruction, would that interfere with the ability of the department to assure quality education for the students?
Through the chair, Representative Parrish, I think the concern is that we have a mechanism for, particularly for native languages, we have a Type I certificate. But if a district has a bilingual program and a Type I certification, I think most of the goals in this bill for native languages can be attained. The difference, though, is on this line that says any subject if the language of instruction is not English. That kind of opens the door where we don't really have a mechanism to test the proficiency of the language, and we don't really have a mechanism to test the depth of knowledge of the content area of the instructor. So we have two things that are fairly unknown, and the quality of instruction makes a huge difference in academic achievement. And either we have to develop those things, which would be incredibly expensive, and there would be a very high fiscal note that would be questioned, or we put the fiscal note at zero, realizing it would be indeterminate, and we don't test those, but then we don't really have a way of making sure the quality of the language and the content is there. And so that's a concern.
Representative Fansler.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I have a couple of questions, and I may have missed this, but could you explain more? You just said what a Type I teacher certificate is and what that entails. Contrast it with the Type M and maybe lay some of this out in front of us for that?
Through the chair, Representative Fansler, a Type I is a certificate that was generated through regulation that allows for a paraprofessional to who is on track to complete a bachelor's degree in education to gain a little bit of authority in a classroom that they may not previously have. It'd be like they would be in a student teaching position. There's a number of checks and balances within that certificate, including the idea that they will eventually take a basic competency exam and complete their teacher preparation program. They also have some other mechanisms where there's oversight by a certified teacher and also oversight by the university that is that they are enrolled in to complete their program. The district, as with the Type M, requests that certificate, and that certificate is looked at on a yearly basis to make sure that the individual is making progress in their program and those supports are being continued.
Follow up, if I may.
Go ahead, Rick.
So we currently have immersion schools in Bethel, so I'll use my own district if it is. So through the chair, I guess, are you telling me that right now the department, vets the content of every one of our immersion school classes as well as the quality of the instruction and the quality of the UPIC instruction that's happening in that school?
Through the chair, Representative Fansler, we rely somewhat on the district to do some of that vetting. Through the bilingual programs that these teachers are engaged in, they have developed curriculum. They have set up their school days so that there's that connection between a regularly certified teacher and the Type I certificated individual. So we rely heavily on the districts in some regards for those supports, with the expectations that there's other supports as well. Does that get to the heart of your question?
Follow up, if I may, through the chair. Maybe I need to clarify this, my question. So what I'm hearing is that there are two situations that you're concerned about with this bill. You're concerned that you no longer have a way to vet the quality of the content being taught, mm-hmm. because it's no longer being taught in English, where you've already vetted the quality and set out the ideals that are needing to be met. And then you also said you don't have the ability to vet the quality of, let's say, whatever language is being used, Spanish, because those are your two concerns that I heard from your part of the presentation. And I'm saying if in schools that we have, and we have numerous of them throughout, are both of those things in any school that already exists? We have a UPIC immersion school that teaches in UPIC every day pretty much in Bethel. Mm-hmm. Do you currently vet for those two things, and they've gone through your approval processes?
Through the chair, Representative Fansler, we as a department do not vet the curriculum of a district. So on that regards, no, we do not examine the curriculum in the native language. That's the responsibility of the district. For the teachers involved in those programs, though, we do have mechanisms in place where we have a minimum expectation of both content and competencies and basic competencies.
Final follow-up, if I may, through the chair.
Go ahead.
So then correct me if I'm wrong, you're, I guess, hesitation with this bill is more that it may allow schools within the districts to make decisions that the districts once made?
Through the chair to Representative Hansler, I would say that just beware that that's a change. What we currently have, we don't have a situation where a school and a district can be in conflict on whether someone is certified. That's been always been the weight has gone to the district. So this allowing the Academic Policy Committee of a charter school to make a request for certification and allowing them to continue to continue that certification and to renew it is something new, because that's always been a district. It's coming through the district. So that changes the balance of influence. And so that is a change, and it opens up the possibility that a school and a district, a district does not have the confidence in the quality, and the school is still making that request. So that's a change that we just want to make sure everyone is aware of.
And could I add also, I think, back to Representative Fansler's question, the change for that the bill allows is the actual endorsement in math and science on a Type M certificate in the language of instruction that hasn't been there before. So we, right now, do issue Type M's, but they are the endorsement in the areas in which the teacher is allowed to teach is limited to the language, culture, whether or not they have expertise in a CTE or a career technical education area, and a military science, or ROTC. So the ask on the bill is for us to also be endorsing individuals in other content areas that we don't put on our certificates.
Sorry.
Our Type M's before.
One more follow-up through the chair. So now I'm confused again. I know we have teachers in my district teaching math in UPIC. How is that being vetted right now, currently?
Through the chair, I'd say that I go back to those three things of quality, capacity, and trust. And I think one of the goals of this bill are really very similar to with the goals of the department. We want to see strong language programs, revitalization of languages. We have very similar goals. And the difference is that if a district, not just a school, but if a district has a bilingual program and they've made the commitment to have some of these checks and balances and move people, we have this Type I certification. So there's a district commitment. We are putting, I'd say, a fair amount of trust into the district in checking those things. But that the district having a bilingual program and through with the Type I certification is a mechanism to do that. This bill allows a school just to request it, but we don't really have a way to test the content, whether the teacher, not how the content is taught, but we don't really have a way to test whether the teacher understands the content.
Okay, Representative Fansler, is that it?
I guess I'm, yeah, just to summarize then, what the major concern is that I'm taking away from this is that this allows, in an extreme situation, we could say, schools within a district to go rogue and start to authorize anybody teaching anything because they can teach in a different language. Is that what the concern is?
Through the chair, I would not, the title of this bill isn't the Go Rogue bill, so I don't want to put any words or perceptions to that. But I would just say that we are concerned about. We see the goals of this bill to try and increase capacity. Our concerns is how do we ensure that there's quality and that there's also a change between a school and a district could be in conflict, and we could see some challenges with that.
Okay. thank you. And might I remind the speakers that you should put your name on the record each time, although the listener can tell the difference between Sandra and Bob for the benefit of the recorder. And also, I totally forgot to note that Representative Tallarico arrived at 8:12, so we have a full committee. And Representative Sponholz is next.
I just wanted to follow up on Representative Fansler's original question, which was the distinction between type I and type M, and I think he did a fantastic job of describing what a type I certification was, but I didn't quite get what the type M certification was.
Through the chair, Sandra Meredith for the record. Through the chair, Representative...
Sponholz.
Sponholz. Sorry, they take my a little bit... I had the same problem with Clinkett. I mm-hmm. My tongue is not working. Now. Yeah, yes. So the Type M has been on the books for a long time. It's statutory. It allows for an individual with expertise in the three areas to become certified and only teach in those three areas that are listed in the statute that are in its in the bill. Maintains those three that on the bill. That's 1, 2, and 3 in section 1, the Alaska Native Culture / Language, the ROTC or Military Science, and the Career and Technical Education. But it's a limited certificate. They are only allowed to teach specifically in those areas.
Okay. Thank you.
You're welcome.
Okay. Thank you, Representative Sponholz. Couldn't we just work on the change, since you said earlier that the type I and also the type M were developed through regulation rather than through statute? Is that, did I hear that correctly?
Sandra Meredith for the record. Chair Drummond, the State Board has used regulations to do some clarity around the process of applications for a Type M. We've also added, for the Type M CTE certificate, we've added an additional basic competency requirement for that certificate with recommendations from the field that CTE is very closely tied to academics and felt that it was appropriate for those instructors within a year of getting their certificate to be able to prove their basic competencies. So it's started in statutes with additional guidelines placed in our regulations around them.
So would it be possible to work on the regulations for M and I without changing the statute in order to accomplish the wish of this bill? Or would that once again require expensive translated exams for testing competency?
Sandra Meredith again for the record. Chair Drummond, the differences that I see between, I think the limitation right now is on the world languages. We really don't have permission through the statute to provide a Type M for world languages. So I think that would specifically need to be a change in the statute. Beyond that, putting additional quality checks could be done through regulations as long as we still had the mechanism of using exams if they to do some of that checking at some point within the life of the certificate, either prior to certification or during that certification time frame.
The Anchorage School District has several language immersion programs that have been in existence for decades, Japanese, Russian, Spanish. Do those teachers have, well, and I know they are all cleared to teach I mean, these go right through the high school level. So those teachers have clearly been certified to teach all the subject areas that are required in their particular language. Is that strictly through the Anchorage School District's process, or is the department involved at some point in those three particular languages? And I think there are some others, but I'm not recalling them all right now.
Sandra Meredith, for the record. Chair Drummond, all teachers in charter schools or in regular schools that are considered teachers of record are fully certified in our state. That includes a basic competency exam and the completion of a teacher preparation program, and that is how, and a background check. The department is definitely involved in that piece of quality assurance piece. Though all of those individuals would be fully certified.
Through the chair, I'd just add that I think a lot of the goals of this bill can be achieved if a district is committed to having a bilingual program and can get there through the Type I certification. So I think a lot of those goals can be reached, but the not being able to give the competency tests that we currently have or having to develop new ones is where there's a challenge.
Mm-hmm. Understood. Representative Kopp, did I see your hand?
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you, and I'm appreciative of the bill sponsor for bringing this forward. You know, this is a great discussion, and some of the things that strike me at a high level is I appreciate the fact that this bill opens the door to being very responsive to what parents want at a local level. In immersion, you may already be a native speaker, writer, and reader in that language, and it's possible that subject matter expertise outside of the reading, writing, and speaking is of secondary emphasis to those families. And that's a judgment call that they would rather have the emphasis be on the reading, writing, and speaking. And if you have an academic policy of a charter school, the only reason why they would seek this type of certificate and be willing to advocate for a teacher to receive a specific, because it does say in the bill they have to also ask for the subject matter of record that the person will be teaching, that's something that the parents want. And I don't know of a better judge of a quality of a program than parents knocking the door down for it, because they won't if they're not getting an end result that is something that they feel is marketable in the marketplace where they live in their community, or meets the higher goals that they're pursuing. Instruction in another language, you know, Madam Chair, seems to me a far different thing than immersion. We know that just grasping the reading, writing, and speaking of any language is very difficult, much less the technical subject matter. And in those types of programs, the students definitely are learning the subject matter in English in our school system. But immersion, it is different. This is kind of an immersion topic. The quality that we speak of, again, I really feel like if this is something that is being driven by parents that really want this type of a thing in these district or specific schools, then we should leave the door open for that. And I think encouraging districts to partner with schools that do want this to be their emphasis gives more choice in the market and is more responsive of local community needs. And I would note that the Anchorage School District is in support of this, and I think it's a great idea. We may need to fine-tune the bill a bit, but I appreciate the bill sponsor bringing it forward. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Representative Johnson, did you have a question?
Okay.
Anyone else? Let's allow the invited testifiers to come forward, and I'm sure there will be additional questions that the committee will have. Thank you both.
Thank you. Okay.
I have, Brandon, Jennifer Schmidt. Jennifer Schmidt, Principal, Frontier Spanish Immersion, Wasilla. Are you on the phone with us?
Yes, I am.
Okay. Go ahead. Put yourself on the record.
All right. Hi, this is Jennifer Schmidt-Hutchins. I am the principal of Frontier Spanish Immersion Charter School. We are a public K-8 charter school in the Mat-Su School District. And I want to share, am I allowed to go ahead now?
Yes, ma'am. Go ahead.
Okay, great.
Thank you.
Well, good morning, everybody. I want to share why I feel House Bill 102 is significantly important. We are, like I said, Spanish immersion, and I do want to clarify that when we talk about immersion, immersion is teaching academic content in another language. It's not teaching that language, per se, in our case. It is actually teaching the academic content in our target language, which is Spanish. And to give just a little bit of background, I took over Fronteras as the principal 6 years ago in the fall of 2011, and at that time, our enrollment was 207 students. This year, 6 years later, our current enrollment is 289, and our projected enrollment for next school year is 316, and that will put us very, very close to our maximum capacity. And we do remain the only language immersion school in the Mat-Su School District. Because our school's immersion program continues to strengthen, we have been able to gain just awesome support from our school district leadership, our school, local school board, borough leadership, and of course our entire borough assembly. And it was through this support that we were able to secure a loan through USDA last year and was able to construct our new school building that we currently sit in right now. And we are the first school and so far the only school in Alaska to go through this USDA process. And I believe that our success in securing that loan was not only because we have that wonderful relationship with all of our powerful entities, but because our program does continue to grow stronger and grow in interest every year from our families. I don't believe that we would have our new school building and our consistently growing enrollment year after year if learning a second language was not seen as a wonderful benefit, both intellectually for our students and eventually in their adult life financially. You know, teaching the different cultures, and in our case, Spanish, is a huge piece of our particular school's charter. And to properly teach culture, you need instructors who are capable of weaving culture into their daily lessons and activities, because culture truly should not be taught separately, especially in a language immersion school. And the significance to House Bill 102, I do want to speak specifically now about two of our teachers that, you know, really just sad stories. So one of our teachers currently is a single mother from Colombia. She's making substitute pay, which is $16 an hour versus the $21 that she would make if she were to be granted her teacher certificate. She is fully certified in Colombia. Her credits have been vetted here, but she is still required to complete and successfully pass the basic competency test, and then after that, she's allowed to attempt to take her practice test. Well, these are English language exams. So I'll get to really the yucky part of that for these folks, but I do want to share the second story really quick. This is another one of our teachers. She's from Puerto Rico. She, again, fully certified and was teaching in Puerto Rico. So initially, when she got here, this particular teacher was earning certified pay while working towards successfully passing the practice exam, which qualifies teachers as highly qualified, which is a must, and that it also qualifies them to receive their Alaska teacher certificate. Being a native Spanish speaker from Puerto Rico, this gal, her English is extremely limited. She did not speak a word of English when she arrived in Alaska last fall to teach with us. So when these two gals are taking an English language exam, when they are native Spanish speakers, they have to read each set of directions and each question in English. They then have to translate into their Spanish language. They have to formulate an answer in their language, then translate that answer into English, all the while hoping to be successful that they are actually translating correctly. Now, on top of all those extra steps, these tests are timed. The maximum additional time that our two teachers have been able to petition for is 50 minutes. Now, when you're taking a test that requires basically a minimum 4 hours, an additional 50 minutes when you're having to translate so much is not really beneficial. Now, because of the level of difficulty this teacher is experiencing, these both of them, but the second teacher here who started out receiving certified pay, she has gone past the initial year period that she was granted to pass the exam. She has, as of 3 months ago, has taken close to a 50% pay cut. She is now considered a substitute teacher, and she went from earning $5,100 a month gross to $2,600 a month. Additionally, both of these teachers I refer to teach only in their native language. They do not instruct in English at all. So to require them to take an English language test in order to demonstrate that they can instruct students successfully just does not make sense. It's prohibiting excellent teachers, in my opinion, from actually teaching. And for us, our school, it's making it extremely difficult for our students to, our school to complete its mission, which is to provide an authentic immersion academic experience. So I want to just truly give my full support, and I am so grateful that this bill has come forward once again and all of the work is being done, because from the sponsor statement, it says in a nutshell, tackling one of the biggest challenges facing Alaska's immersion programs, finding fully certified teachers also fluent in a native or foreign language. House Bill 102 provides districts and charter schools case-by-case flexibility to hire language teachers that they know are qualified to lead a classroom, but who, in our case, have limited English proficiency. It's a wonderful bill.
Thank you.
And I don't know if anyone has any questions for me. I'm happy to answer as best as I can.
There are hands going up. Principal Hutchins, hold on a second. I was not aware that the praxis was available in anything but English, and frankly, this is a national test.
Mm-hmm. Correct.
Considering how many people in the United States speak Spanish, that absolutely shocks me that it's not available in Spanish. And I assume that the school district can't provide a translator for the questions.
There are no translators allowed. We asked for that.
So each teacher that, or each instructor that is taking the praxis has to translate the questions themselves.
On their own.
Develop their answer.
By a period of time.
Okay.
Yep, that is correct. No translators are allowed.
Are you familiar with something called the alternative route praxis?
No, I'm not.
Okay. Well, we'll see if any of the folks from the department know about this.
Okay.
I have a question for you from Representative Johnston.
And this might not be for you, but I want to get the question out on the record. Are these teachers allowed to bring their iPhone with them to the test or any kind of electronics?
No.
So they can't use any software, any translating software?
No. Nope, that is correct. Not allowed.
Okay. Any more? Representative Parrish.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And thank you for your testimony. I noticed that the people whom you've hired have teaching certificates from other countries.
Correct.
Is that generally the prerequisite that you look for when considering an immersion teacher?
We do, just because it will shorten the process, basically. Otherwise, you know, with they're granted the initial, if they qualify, and there are qualifications they have to meet, I'm not sure on all of them. But it's best for us, time-wise, and just legitimacy, if they have a teaching certificate. But I know, personal experience, too, we've had folks in our school, relatives to families we have here, that are amazing with students and amazing instructors. I mean, it's just innate in that. They just have that ability, but they don't have a teaching degree, and it would take them a minimum of 4 years.
Thank you.
Okay, thank you, mm-hmm. Mr. Parrish. Any other questions for the speaker? Thank you. Thank you very much, Ms. Hutchins. If you would stand by in case other questions come up.
Sure.
Brandon Locke of Anchorage, are you on the phone with us?
I am here. Can you hear me?
Yes. Go ahead and put yourself on the record and go ahead with your testimony.
Sure. My name is Brandon Locke, and I'm the Senior Director of Curriculum and Instruction, Specialization in World Language and Immersion Education for the Anchorage School District. Madam Chair and members of the House Education Committee, thank you for letting me testify this morning. And similar to Principal Hutchins, the Anchorage School District fully supports this very important bill. As was noted earlier in your conversation, your committee, the Anchorage School District does have a wide variety of successful language immersion programs. We have approximately 8,000 students in grades K through 12 in not only immersion, but in our what we would consider more traditional foreign language or world language classes. Of that, 2,500 are in our K-12 immersion programs. We offer Japanese, which we've had for 27 years. We have the nation's very first Russian immersion program. We have two Spanish programs. One is a two-way bilingual program. We also have launched for the very first time in Alaska Mandarin Chinese immersion this fall with 42 kindergartners. We have a K-8 German immersion charter school. And we also offer another Alaska Native charter school that has a Yupik FLES program, and FLES is more of a pull-out model, similar to how elementary school students go and see an art teacher or a music teacher. In addition to that, we also offer ASL, Chinese, French, German, Japanese, Latin, Russian, and Spanish as part of our just regular traditional language program. Our immersion programs specifically are in high demand with the community, often having huge wait lists and have a long-standing history of being successful. The goal of our programs, obviously parents choose to put their children in these programs because of the ongoing success, but really to give their children an edge as they enter the workforce later in life because of our increasingly diverse world and 21st century and the skills that are needed to be successful. We've also had numerous requests to begin an Arabic, French, and Korean program, and so we're about to launch a community-wide survey to see what the true numbers of interest really there are. Similar to Principal Hutchins, I want to give two examples, and I see this bill not only to be a huge help for immersion, but also the bill doesn't specify immersion only. It uses the language of teaching in a language other than English. We had last year significant problems with a couple major medical leave issues. We had two Spanish teachers. One was a high school Spanish immersion teacher, and the other was a high school Spanish teacher. Both went out for different reasons, both medically related. One teacher ended up resigning in September, and we were unable to fill that position with a certified teacher. We actually hired a native Spanish speaker who had a degree in engineering from her home country, but we had to hire her as a regular substitute teacher for $100 a day, and she did that job as a full-time teacher doing all of the lesson planning and grading for the entire year for $100 a day with no other benefits, including medical. Similarly, we offered a person a position teaching French in one of our high schools, and 3 days before the school year began, she revoked or rescinded her agreement to accept the contract, and the school was left without a French teacher. And we do not have a plethora of teachers in the applicant pool waiting to just jump into the classroom. Myself, I'm a former French teacher. I actually cleared my schedule to teach the classes for the first couple weeks. We ended up finding a woman from the community, and it was just literally a coincidence that she had called. She's a French woman from France, 25 to 30-year veteran teacher with a license of teaching in French from France, and has a long history of teaching French as a foreign language to refugee and immigrants in France. Her English was very limited, and she could not pass the Praxis writing test in English. Ironically, she didn't understand the difference between the Praxis 1, which is that basic competency, and the Praxis 2, which is content-specific, so she signed up and took the Praxis 2 in French. which is, you know, designed to make sure that a person is capable of being proficient in French and teaching French. She passed that, obviously. But then when she was told, no, you have to take the basic competency in English for reading, writing, and math, she did the reading, she did the writing, and she passed those. She could not pass she took the reading and the math and passed those, could not pass the writing, and therefore was not able to get an Alaska teaching cert. And similarly, she was paid as a regular substitute doing the job of a full-time teacher with no medical benefits. Where we see this is this bill is that we would continue to fully vet our applicants within the Anchorage School District. We don't see this bill as opening the floodgates and just letting anyone come in, but we see this bill as a way to legitimately help in incredibly hard-to-fill positions within the school district. I can also say that we have one charter school, Lokeshula German Charter School, that does have an APC. However, they have no jurisdiction over the hiring of any employee in their building other than the principal. So all of the teachers in that building are fully vetted and hired by the Anchorage School District. So the APC, while they may request a certificate, that will really have no bearing on the school district because we will have the ultimate say in that. And I also just wanted to clarify two other things. Similar to what Principal Hutchins said with immersion, yes, it is teaching content through the language. However, I want to point out that in our programs in Anchorage, we have a partial immersion program. So 50% of the day is taught in the target language or the foreign language, such as Japanese or Spanish. And those are taught by that part of the day. The students are learning their science and their social studies as well as the language to be successful in those areas in that language. So, for example, the Japanese language to be successful. The other half of the day, they are being instructed in English by an English partner teacher, and that teacher teaches them the English language arts and the math, and that is at our elementary level. Our secondary level, the teachers are teaching either social studies or theme-based language classes that are designed at a more advanced level. And then furthermore, for assessment of teachers to test their proficiency level, there is an agency called LTI, or Language Testing International, and that agency is a national agency that offers tests in hundreds of different languages. So anyone, and that can be used for government officials, for educators, for diplomats, to test their proficiency in language. It doesn't test their proficiency in a content area, but when we have engineers or lawyers from their home countries that are wanting to teach, I believe that through our vetting process, we would make sure that they have the skills necessary to teach. And many of the folks are actually interested in going through a teacher education program, but the biggest challenge is that we're, and I believe, I don't want to misspeak here, but I believe that it's in state statute that a person has to actually hold an Alaska teaching certificate in order for them to get the long-term sub pay, which is more pay a day than a regular sub, but still doesn't have any medical benefits. So really, the bottom line is, you know, we can, piecemeal different substitutes in these hard-to-fill situations, but I'm not sure that is absolutely not the best approach when we have qualified folks that are interested in doing the job and a district that wants to support them and help them in getting their certificate legitimately as well as going through a teacher education program. And that's my testimony. Thank you very much for your time.
Thank you, Mr. Locke. That was absolutely fascinating. I've been away from the Anchorage School District for too long to remember all the details, and I'm amazed that there are 8,000 students in the various language programs. My concern that an academic policy committee would override the local control of the school district is not a factor. Is that what I understood you to say?
Right. At least in our district, all of the teachers that are hired at Lokeshula German Immersion Charter School are teachers of the Anchorage School District, and they go through the same exact vetting process that a teacher that would be teaching at Sand Lake Japanese Immersion or O'Malley Elementary that doesn't have any language immersion program at all. So Wilkeshula could, I mean, the way that the bill is written right now, I believe they could request it. And I don't know what benefit that would be for Wilka applicants, because it doesn't matter if their APC requested it or not. We would still vet and offer them contracts through our HR process.
So the language of the bill as it is before us, the Anchorage School District would override that by your policies that are currently in place.
Sure. I don't know that override is the word I would use. Obviously, I can't speak for any other district other than Anchorage, but I've in the 5 years that I've been in this position, and I've worked closely with their APC chair, never once have they tried to do something without going through district channels for hiring employees. The only person that they have the hiring authority and quite frankly firing authority over is their principal, but all other employees in their building are teachers in clerical and such in the Anchorage School District, and we make sure that simply because if, you know, for any reason, just like in any situation, if a teacher is transferred to a different location for whatever reason, forced transferred or through reduction, or they choose to transfer, we want to make sure that they have the appropriate vetting and background that they could be successful anywhere. And so with this HB 102, the fact that it's a one-year certificate with the ability to have it renewed is an excellent time frame, in my opinion, because, you know, we may have a very, very hard-to-fill position, and we may choose to go to bat for somebody and have them get this certificate. However, in the long run, they may not be very successful, and we choose not to retain them at the end of the year. And that's currently how we function with our Type N folks that are ROTC or, teaching in a vocational area like welders and plumbers. They're all on 1 year as well. So it's not like we're locking ourselves in for the long haul.
Understood. And it also sounds like a lot of the issues. You did mention the Praxis 1 and 2. Maryland, New Jersey, Mississippi, and New Hampshire all have alternative route Praxis exams. Is this something you're aware of or have ever considered? Or is that?
I am not aware of that in terms of the basic competency. I will definitely look into that, though, but I'm not aware of that.
Okay. All right. I think we have some other questions for you, Mr. Locke. Representative Fansler.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Through the chair, and Mr. Locke, I don't want to obviously have you speak word for word on this, but do you know of any other school district that is not operating in the similar fashion that the Anchorage School District would be operating in? Meaning, I'm pretty sure every school district would still, around the state, ultimately retain the ability to, say, fund the teacher position, thereby maintaining their quality control, as you explained Anchorage School District would. Do you know of any that don't do that?
I am not aware of that, no.
Okay. Thank you.
Okay. Anyone else for Mr. Locke? Okay. Thank you very much, Mr. Locke. I appreciate your participating today.
Thank you for your time.
Bet. Let's see. Any more questions of the presenters? And do the presenters have anything else to say at this time?
Thank you, Madam Chair. For the record, Jonathan Christ Tompkins, representative for District 35. Thank you for the opportunity to touch base on a few points, and I think a few follow-ups may be helpful to sort of further contextualize the bill or some of the thinking behind it. And I guess I should also note this is about 2.5 years in the making. So we've been at this and sort of in the weeds for a while and in touch with most, I don't want to say all, but certainly most of Alaska's, I think, immersion language community. in this process. And so understand where the department's coming from, I think, and fundamentally maybe sort of weighting considerations a little bit differently. Mm-hmm. But you know, certainly empathize with the thoughts expressed. And I think Reed has a few follow-ups, and I may in turn follow him.
Go ahead.
Yeah, Madam Chair, Reed Magdan, staff to Representative Christ Tompkins. I know you've got another bill on the calendar today, so please, I'll just hit a couple points and let you decide how much more you want to hear. I did want to just point out a couple things, and like Representative Christ Tompkins said, we understand where the department's coming from. We all want quality schools and quality instructors also. I think it's important, as I mean, Ms. Meredith said in her testimony that in the case of like Ayapun Elit Norvik, the immersion school in Bethel, the State Department already relies on local school districts to do some level of vetting for teachers. And I would emphasize again that these limited certificates are case by case, issued case by case. The school district has to have a particular need for it, find a particular person they are confident can fill that need, and then request a certificate for them, which I think is a pretty major check on the risk of any school going rogue. I also wanted to respond to Mr. Williams' comments about the bilingual programs and his statements that there's kind of a path to do a lot of what this bill wants already through bilingual programs. I would like to further discuss it with the department, I should say first, but as I read it, bilingual programs are very explicitly aimed at improving the English proficiency of limited English proficient students. So in statute, in regulations, are the bilingual programs Mr. Williams was talking about are aimed at taking students who maybe grew up in a Yupik-speaking village or move to the U.S. from another country and improving their English ability. Those programs are not designed to improve the native language or world language ability of someone who's a native English speaker. And relying on that program as it currently stands to fill the needs this bill is trying to fill, I guess I'm not comfortable with that at this point, but would be potentially open to looking at those bilingual programs, and maybe they can be redesigned in a way so they are aimed not just at building English proficiency, but building the proficiency in other languages for English speakers. And then the last thing I wanted to touch on was we have zero intention that the department is going to write competency exams in native languages or world languages. What we're asking instead is that we be a little more creative in figuring out in assessing the competency and ability of these teachers, again, on a case-by-case basis to teach math or science or whatever it is they're asked to teach. I think you can see some examples of that in the existing Type M regulations, where someone who's applying for a native language or culture specialty certificate submits letters of recommendation and a resume demonstrating that they have some competency in that area. If you're getting a vocational education limited certificate, you submit letters of recommendation and evidence of industry certifications. I think that's what we'd be asking for under this bill, is that we provide school districts and the state some flexibility to say, hey, these teachers are being hired because they know Spanish. They're being hired because they know Tlingit, because they know Yupik. Like, that's a big piece of their skill. And it doesn't seem right to me to then say, you have to take an English language test. And I think the testifiers we heard kind of spoke to that as well. And so we're just asking that there be some flexibility to look for other ways of demonstrating that competency.
Okay. Representative Tallarico.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And I appreciate the sponsor bringing this forward. So when I read this bill, it seems like our conversation is turning your bill into quite a monster to me, rather than I don't think your intention was to set standards t- to fill full faculties in immersion schools or anything. And maybe you can help me out a little bit, Representative. I kind of saw this as a, in particularly in the districts that I have, we run a little short occasionally in CTE qualified people, certainly in native language and any of the language classes we might teach. So maybe you can help me out. I had kind of thought in reading this that you were just looking at limited teacher certificates to potentially, if a school district chose to bring someone in who had some certificates, say it was a welding class and they had AWS certifications and they had already been certified to do that, which is pretty prevalent in my district, that a school district might have the ability to bring this person in on a part-time basis to actually give very appropriate instruction to the students and not necessarily have to also be the algebra and history teacher, but to be very specific in that particular area. Did I miss the intent here? It seems like we've gone to full-blown staff faculty positions, and I was reading your intent as taking advantage of the local talent, knowledge, and ability that we had to give that as a huge advantage to our students. Did I miss it?
Thank you for the question, Representative Tallarico. Through the chair, I think that highlights a fundamental issue in the bill, and I can allow Reed to comment further. But I think a couple of points are important in my mind, and I think the invited testimony was is pretty foundational for ultimately pieces of legislation are supposed to be solutions to a problem, and the problem we want to solve, I think, was described in good detail by Mr. Locke and Ms. Schmidt, in that you have situations in which local educational experts and leaders have someone they think is a good fit, and usually it's a special situation. Maybe there was someone who resigned because of medical leave, as Mr. Locke described, or you have just a ringer who came in from Puerto Rico for a Spanish immersion program, and it just makes sense, and I guess the in those situations, we want to preserve the flexibility to allow that local discretion and expertise to sort of determine whether that person is in fact a good fit for the classroom. And I think as Mr. Locke mentioned, because these are only 1 year, it's not intended to be a tenure certificate, right, for instance. And I think that certainly speaks to the intent of what we're aiming for, and at the very least just preserving some flexibility to allow people like Mr. Locke or Ms. Schmidt or others around Alaska be able to bring people in that from their perspective is a good educational fit and going to provide high quality educational experiences for local students makes sense. And I guess I'm just sort of cautious about trying to sort of over regulate or control that from too high a level. I hope I kind of got at your question, and Reed may have further thoughts.
Actually, Representative Christ-Tompkins, we should get on to the other bill. My intent is to hold it. This has opened up an absolutely fascinating world, literally. But I'd see there are concerns about the CTE section and all the other questions that have been brought up today. I'm delighted that the Anchorage School District and the Frontieris principal are in full support, and that helps. But I'm going to set it aside for now, and let's see if we can tweak it to get to the point where we can pass it out of here. Okay? All right. So I will set this bill aside for now. Also, I think there... this was all invited testimony today. I'm sure that there's public who would like to weigh in on this bill the next time we hear it, and we'll make that sooner than 2.5 years from now. I appreciate all the work. All right? So I will set this bill aside for now, and let's move on to House Bill 86, Student Loan Default License Renewal. Bill sponsor, let's see, has come and gone. Okay, great. Let's take a momentary at ease and give the bill some. Oh, he's here. All right, we don't have to take that at ease. Come on up. Good morning.
Good morning.
Put yourselves on the record and give us a presentation.
Thank you. For the record, my name is Matt Clayman, and I am the state representative from House District 21 in West Anchorage, and I want to thank you all for hearing House Bill 86. Thomas Jefferson once said that government is best which governs least, and our goal in bringing forward House Bill 86 is to revoke the Alaska Commission on Post-Secondary Education's authority to use the non-renewal of occupational licenses as an incentive to ensure repayment of student loans in the instance of default. As the consequences of defaulting are already severe and the Commission has not exercised this authority since 2010, we think it makes sense to repeal these statutes. And so with that, I will turn it over to my staff member, Owen Phillips, to tell you a little bit more about the bill.
For the record, my name is Owen Phillips, and I am staff to Representative Clayman. Thank you so much for giving me the time to testify. House Bill 86 repeals current statutes that allow the Alaska Commission on Post-Secondary Education, or ACPE, to threaten non-renewal of occupational licenses for individuals who have defaulted on their student loans. Repealing this authority will allow licensed individuals to continue their work in order to earn an income and pay back their defaulted loans without fear of losing their license. There are already many difficulties that one faces if they default on their student loans, not limited to late fees, court costs, liens on property, and adverse reports to consumer reporting authorities. The current statute states that the Commission has the authority to provide notice to a licensing authority for non-renewal of a license upon default. If the ACPE posts such notice, the licensing entity may not renew said license during the next renewal cycle. Many of these laws were passed in the 1990s and 2000s when student aid was often provided by states. However, now most loans are federal. Last year, Montana became the first state to repeal similar statutes, and this bill will allow us to follow Montana's example and drop that number down to 20 in order to protect our licensed nurses, pharmacists, social workers, teachers, correctional officers, and many others. And now I will provide a brief sectional analysis of the bill. So Section 1 deletes language that is no longer necessary after the repeals that are mentioned in Section 2. And Section 2 repeals the following statutes: Alaska Statute 14.43.145A4, which gives the authority to the Commission to provide notice of a default to a licensing entity for non-renewal of a license. Alaska Statute 14.43.148, which indicates that a licensing entity may not renew a license if they have received notice from the Commission that a licensee has defaulted on a loan issued by the Commission. And Alaska Statute 21.27.390D, which references temporary license. Before I conclude, I will mention for the record that Jamie Hovenden, the director of the Division of Corporations, Businesses, and Professional Licensing, and Stephanie Butler, the executive director of the Alaska Commission on Post-Secondary Education and executive officer of the Alaska Student Loan Corporation, are present and available to answer questions. And I would like to say thank you very much for the opportunity to speak on House Bill 86. And with that, Madam Chair, I'm happy to answer any questions or pass them along.
Thanks very much, Owen. So there is no testimony impending from either Ms. Hovenden or Ms. Butler. They're just here to answer questions.
Correct.
Okay. Are there questions for Representative Fansler? Go ahead.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And through the chair, one is a request. Is there a way we could get a copy of the sectional analysis for our packets? I don't believe I received one.
My guess is it's probably posted on BASIS, but we can make sure. We'll make sure that you get it.
Sure. Through the chair, Representative Fansler, there is not actually a sectional analysis, just what I read.
I did
not provide one.
Okay,
I apologize.
Can we maybe get a copy of that?
Would that be
perfect? Thanks. And then through the chair, is there obviously a worry that removing this will result in more defaults or something. I mean, really, we're like a carrot and a stick situation, and this seems to be taking away a stick, which I completely understand. But is there any worry that this will result in more default loans?
Through the chair, Owen Phillips, staff of Representative Klayman. As far as I understand, at this point in time, they've only exercised the right prior to 2010, and at that, there were 155 instances at this time. And as you can see in the fiscal note, there are no there's no plans to re-implement the practice. So I don't know if Ms. Butler would like to comment any further on that, but.
Yes.
Sure.
If you want to, come ahead. Good morning, Ms. Butler. I think you know the drill.
Good morning. Thank you for having me. For the record, Stephanie Butler, Executive Director for the Commission on Post-Secondary Education. And the Commission does not have concerns about this bill or concerns about the impacts on default rates. excuse me, briefly, historically, in the late 90s, when we were seeing very high default rates impact the costs for our new borrowers, the legislature gave us a suite of authorities in order to assist or in some cases compel a borrower who defaulted to take responsibility for their loan. We discovered in administering those that some of them were more effective than others. Our two major criteria are, is this an efficient authority to use, and is it actually helping our borrowers repay their loans? We discovered that in this case, this authority was not particularly effective in assisting borrowers in repaying their loans, and the bill sponsor is absolutely correct that we haven't used it in quite a number of years as a result.
Okay. Thank you, Ms. Butler. Any questions, further questions from Ms. Butler? Okay, thank you very much for being here. Any further questions for the bill sponsor? Do we have any public testimony? I don't see anybody on our list. So let's see. Hold on a second. Testimony is now closed. Oh, okay. Excuse me. Is there anyone in the room who wishes to testify on this bill? Seeing no one in the room or on the phone, I will close public testimony on this bill. Are there any further questions from the committee? This is easy. Oh, Representative Tully.
Just a comment, Madam Chair, that I just want to let the sponsor know that I appreciate this. And I'm sure the intent when this was brought around was actually to compel someone to do this. But really, if you think about a person has the, mm-hmm. say, the probability of lien against property, things being seized from them, and then we would actually move to remove some type of certificate or license to reduce their earning power to cover their debt. It seems to be backwards. So I just want the sponsor to know and his staff how much I appreciate you bringing this forward.
Thank you, Representative Tallarico. I agree. It's a very common sense bill. Any further questions or comments? Okay. Seeing none, I would like a motion.
I move version 30-LS0382/A of House Bill 86 from the Education Committee with individual recommendations and attached to zero fiscal note.
Any objections? Seeing none, the bill passes. Congratulations. This is the last item on our agenda today, so we'll sign the paperwork as soon as we gavel out. And I'd like to remind members that we do not have a House Education meeting this Friday. All right. We stand adjourned at 9:32 a.m.